Good evening. Welcome to WFIU and Profiles, a program where we go beyond the public image and get to know the person behind the persona, the substance behind the image, where we meet some of the people who make a difference in the South Central Indiana community. I'm Bob Willard, and I will be your host this evening as we meet singer, composer, songwriter, and mother, Carrie Newcomer. Carrie, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
It's nice to be here.
Now, Carrie, Scott Alaric wrote, "Listen to a folk music hater groan about the genre, and certain words are bound to come out. Words like introspective, self-indulgent, and the old favorite, a bunch of navel gazers. Yet it is at this precise junction where personal meets universal, where the small human moment captures the large human truth, that contemporary folk music is at its best. And it is at that fine and delicate point that Carrie Newcomer's music lives. Her songs spill over with everyday moments, moods, and manners. She pens songs that always transcend her own experience, that always reach to those listening." I just thought that was a better introduction than anything I could have come up with, so Thank you for indulging me there. But, Carrie, to set the stage, in what genre of music do you feel best describes the music you perform?
Well, that's always been a hard one because I definitely go under the category of crossover artist. I'm a folk singer because I'm a girl with a guitar, you know, and I can stand up and sing my songs as is. But I also work with a band. I use a lot of roots instruments. There's a goodly portion of, you know, rock and roll and pop in there. So it does cross over and cross boundaries quite a bit. Right now, there's a new format of music that just kind of started in the last couple of years called Americana music. And that's really been a nice phenomena for me because it's composed of all those artists who are crossing boundaries that are on the edges of mainstream pop or mainstream country or even alternative music. But they're working on the edges and they're crossing boundaries. And it's a nice genre for me, and it's good company, I think, to be included with.
It's fairly all-encompassing, too, isn't it? So it covers a wider area than just folk or
yes,
just rock.
It really does. And I think the definitions for music in the United States are so narrowly defined. It's very difficult for an artist sometimes when they don't fit into any one record bin, you know, very
well. We
easily
figured that out, don't you? All your records here in town say local artist. That's your bin.
In Bloomington, I've got it covered.
Doesn't work in Des Moines, though, does it?
No, not in Des Moines.
You mentioned root instruments. Can you define that?
Well, you know, I use a lot of acoustically based sounds and instrumentation. I play an acoustic guitar, usually, not electric. Use a lot of acoustic instruments, everything from acoustic keyboards to, violins, mandolins, accordions, instruments that are you can play on the front porch all without amplification.
It doesn't have to be plugged in.
No, but in turn, I also do use amplification. You know, these instruments are amplified, especially in performance, so that you can balance with a whole band. I do use electric instruments with the band I work with now. So it's, again, I'm kind of fudging on that acoustic music thing.
Okay. We will get to this later. You've just released a new album, a new CD. But could we go back to the beginning and sort of follow the itinerary of your life to get you where you have just released a new CD and all as much of it in between that we might, that you could share with us?
Well, gosh, in terms of how things have started out, it's been a long and winding road, definitely.
You're from Indiana, though.
I'm from Indiana. Okay. I grew up in northern Indiana, little factory town, Elkhart, kind of mid-state, right at the Michigan line. And
that's where all the instruments are from, though.
Yes.
I mean, that's where they make a lot of instruments. They don't migrate from there.
Yeah, that's part of really how I got into doing music. I didn't come from a real musical family, but Elkhart was the town that was home to many band instrument factories. You know, everybody's parents worked in the band instrument factories. And, you know, Selmer was there and Kahn and Armstrong. And it was just, you know, that kind of town. So as a result, the public school system in Elkhart had a wonderful music program. And it was kind of a big deal if you could get into the musical program. That meant you were like a good student or something, you know. So when I was about 8, I kind of entered the public school music program. And I really just fell in love with it. You do these different things as a kid. You try this thing, you do that thing. And at one point, you experience something new, a new experience like playing music. And you go, wow, I really like this. And you do it a lot. And you do it instead of doing something else because you really enjoy this particular activity. And music was like that for me. So I did music through school. And that was kind of the beginning of the whole thing. So, yes, the American public school system.
But you weren't standing up there with a guitar and singing there, were you?
No, that came later. I started out on flute and played in band and orchestra sort of things. And then about the time I was a teenager, I encountered the singing poets, the singer-songwriters, and was really moved by that whole genre of music. Picked up the guitar, you know, decided to learn how to play guitar. Well, actually, I swiped my sister's guitar for a while till she found out. And then my dad helped me buy a guitar. You know, you mow lawns for this long and I'll help you get the guitar. Got my first guitar and taught myself, basically. Learned my first 3 chords, wrote my first really drippy song. You know, it's...
Now, how old are you now when you're doing this? You're still in high school.
I'm about 14, yeah.
And you're learning the guitar on your own.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And writing your own songs.
Yes, I'm listening to a lot of records, people who I like that I would get records, and I'd listen to it, and I'd try to play what I heard. With my 3 chords. Bob Dylan.
Okay.
You can do a lot of Bob Dylan with 3 chords. But eventually, well, I used books, and I also had other friends that were into music and playing guitar that I would kind of glean from. I've always been a gleaner. It's like whenever I work with musicians who I find interesting, I've always made it a real point to say, okay, what did you do? Why did you do it? And show me how.
They probably learned it the same way, though.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you're in high school, you're writing songs. Are you performing anywhere now?
I was a very shy kid, you know, and it was interesting that I was writing these things. And I would play for some of my friends sometimes. And then I had this teacher, a humanities teacher, who was a wonderful jazz player and had a car accident, couldn't play anymore, and became a teacher. One of the most wonderful teachers I think I've ever had. Very encouraging to what I was doing musically. And he made this deal with me that I didn't have to write papers. I could write songs instead.
What a nice thing.
Yeah. His name is Van Young. What a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. But the deal was also I could write songs instead of my papers, but I had to play them for the class. That was the deal. So that's how I started playing in front of people, really, in this class. And I was so scared. And it was just a wonderful experience, though. And from there, I guess I just got a lot of encouragement from this teacher and also from friends who kind of liked the songs I was writing. So from there, I started working in, got a job up in a border bar in Michigan at one point, I remember. The drinking age was younger. At that time, it was 18 in Michigan, and if you could, like, reach over the bar in those border bars.
the border went right through the bar.
That's right. You could get served there. So I got a job working in a bar up there and kind of did that until I remember one night my parents showed up. They actually didn't mind, you know. They thought it was okay. They just wanted me to know that.
They didn't know you were playing there?
They knew I was playing
okay.
there. They just decided to show up so that I would know that they knew. So
That's a gulp moment, though, isn't it?
It was. It really was. There you are playing, and you look in the back, and there's your dad with a beer, you know.
Then you went on to college after this?
Yes, I did. I went on to college, and I went to school for visual art, though, because I was also very interested in visual art at that time and did a lot of that in high school.
Painting, sculptor?
Painting and drawing, mostly. Okay. Then later in college, a lot of small sculpture. That's what I went to college for. Eventually getting the visual arts degree and then a teacher's license to go with it.
And you went to school here in the state?
Well, yes, I did. I was on the how many schools can you go to in one undergraduate degree program. No, how many credits can you lose in one?
By transferring.
Transferring in one program. But I spent a year at Ball State, which is here in the state. But most of the time I was at a small college called Goshen College. It was a small Mennonite school up in northern Indiana. And that's where I did most of my undergraduate work. Then finished up my last year at Purdue.
Boy, that's a variety of schools.
No one's ever accused me of just being like, you know, following the straight and narrow.
You're willing to take the risk, that's for sure. But all this time, you are still performing and
yes.
writing and creating and honing your skills.
Yes, during that whole time, you know, I was playing and I'd sing in coffee houses, things like that. And actually, the last couple of years of school, that was a great deal of how I put myself through school. I was putting myself through school through this time period, and you know, I'd drop out and work in bars and bowling alleys and wherever they'd pay me, and then go back to school and work on my degree. So during this whole time, I was doing music and going to school for visual art.
That's fascinating that the visual arts was going alongside the performing arts. Was there any crossover, or did one help the other?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think all the arts, I mean, I think they all come from the same place, really, and they're just different ways of expressing it. And I think my work in visual arts, one thing it taught me was a discipline. You know, to get better, you need to have a discipline. You need to hone and practice your skills. You know, learning about deadlines, that sort of thing. Partly, I would say that the visual aspects of what I was doing there, too. I'm a very visually minded person, I think, and my poetry is very visually oriented often. So, you know, kind of bleeds over.
You ever have any chance to take up the brush or the palette or anything anymore?
I don't do so often anymore, but every now and then I get the old, you know, gouache out.
You mentioned singer poets.
Mm-hmm.
And were these the influences that led you in the direction of the music making you've done? And who might they be? You talked about this teacher who mm-hmm. let you write poetry to perform as versus
yes.
papers.
Yes.
What, I mean, he's like your godfather. He gave you the touch to go do it. But who are people that you imitated or listened to or gave you direction who were the big artists of the day, possibly?
Well, you know, I was kind of coming up through the late 70s and mid to late 70s, I guess. And those kind of singing poets were, folks like, gosh, Joni Mitchell, who has influenced an entire generation of women songwriters, I think. Bruce Colburn out of Canada. I listened to him a lot. Bob Dylan, Leonard Cohen, Janis Ian. The more poppy end, someone like, you know, Jackson Brown or James Taylor. I mean, getting into that area. I also listened to an awful lot of Motown at that time, too. So, again, I'm switching over. I think my first musical, desire was to be one of Aretha Franklin's backup gals, but that didn't pan out, so I started writing songs
There's
instead.
Some problems here, I think.
Yeah. But, you know, so I went and wrote songs instead, you know.
Well, why don't we listen to the results of some of this? Can we have some music? Did you bring something for us?
Sure. Since we were talking Aretha, there's a song on this new album. I had this new album that came out in April. And it's called My True Name, and there's a song in it called When One Door Closes. And it's a folk song slash gospel tune. Got some wonderful, I mean, really just world-class gospel singers to sing on it. And it was really just a lot of fun. So let's do that one.
Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
One door closes, another door opens wide. It's hard to believe all of these locked doors I've tried, and you can't pray for what you want or what you'd have instead. You can only offer up your heart and ask that you be led.
We have just heard our special guest, Carrie Newcomer, perform on her new album, My True Name, the song When One Door Closes, Another One Opens Wide. Thank you so much for sharing that with us right now.
Well, thanks for playing.
Okay. Now, Carrie, you grew up, as you've told me, near an Amish community. You attended a Mennonite college, and you spent time with the Quakers.
Yes.
Now, these are all disciplines that must have brought something to your music. What would that be?
Well, I think, you know, I wasn't raised in that tradition, but I think I've always been very drawn to the very socially conscious aspects of the traditional peace churches, which, you know, the Amish and the Quakers and the Mennonites all represent. You know, it's an attitude, I think, that you know, if you love God, then what you do is you love people and you do your best to make the world a better place for, you know, people to be in. I like that attitude. There's a kind of simplicity to it, kind of cut down to the bone, that I really like. I attend a silent Quaker meeting now for many years, and which, you know, makes people laugh sometimes. Here I am, a musician. My life is sound, and I go to a silent meeting. I think it makes sense for me. It's a chance to let everything clear out, to really focus, to find the center place that I'm coming from, that my music's coming from, that I'm coming from as a person.
Okay, let's just hold on to this for a minute. Then, when you say center or meditate, how does this help keep the soul of the artist in you alive?
Ah, the soul of an artist. That's such an interesting idea.
It's open to personal interpretation.
It is. It really is. But I do think I was born with that. I think people are born with that. And maybe they discover it later. Maybe they know right away. Like I said before, I didn't come from a very musical family. And so it's always been this desire, this longing for creation, for creating that artistic sense. I mean, to find expression.
You mentioned going to a Quaker meeting where mm-hmm. it's quiet and you can center.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you center? How do you meditate? And how does this help keep the soul of the artist alive?
Well, I think it's really important to, for me anyways, to be centered. I write my best music. I think I perform in my best capacity when I'm working from a centered place. You know, and that's a whole range of discipline, I think. Some of that has to do with meditation as such. Some of it has to do with taking care of myself physically, making sure that I'm especially on the road, running, you know, taking the vitamins, that sort of stuff. Some of it has to do with being very in touch with, you know, what's happening right now, sorting through it. I journal a lot. I do a lot of writing. I write every day. And part of that is a centering process. And out of that comes many of my songs. So this whole centering process, it's for me, it's just the way I'm trying to walk through my life and have it make sense. And that's where my best artwork comes from being in the center and also trying to find the center.
But taking the time to listen and find that focus.
Yes, I think it's a real conscious choice a person makes. I mean, life is so busy. I mean, all of us lead such busy lives, and there's so much going on. And it's very easy to get lost or just perhaps to get unfocused. So I think it's a real conscious choice to decide, you know, I'm going to walk through my life in a very conscious sort of way and live it in the best way I can.
When we talked earlier, you said the expression, the importance of the great loves. What do you mean?
Well, you know, I always say when I'm not writing, if I have a writer's block or something, it's because I'm not living enough. My work comes out of living. And so one of my great loves is music, of course, and writing. It's a great passion of mine. And I've followed it when I didn't even know where it was leading me. But behind that passion are all these other great loves that feed into it, I think. I have a great love for my daughter. I have a daughter who is just the jewel of my life. And the passion for people, what I write about generally is about people and how they grow and how they heal and how they experience life and how they can become better and change. And, you know, I have this great love for people and what they're capable of. I mean, people will blow you away every time, you know. There's a great love there. There's a great love for the Creator, you know, that something bigger than myself that keeps me also centered. You know, I have these great loves, getting in the dirt and making, you know, my garden and making sure that I'm in touch with the ground. That's very important to me. You know, there's a whole series, I guess, of great loves of my life.
You tend to write a lot about reality, not about bombs somewhere else 4,000 miles away, but about what's right here. And those shoes might have been right across the table from you a minute ago.
Yes, definitely. It's very immediate kind of music and kind of writing, though hopefully it's not too, I don't want to write my journal. I don't want to write my diary. I mean, I have diaries for that. What I'm really trying to do is write about what we both recognize, what you and I both know about as human beings. So, you know, it might have happened to me and it might have been in my shoes. And these might be my details to make it rich. But, you know, what I'm really talking about is human being things, about laughing and crying and grieving and great joy and embarrassment and confusion and epiphany, you know, human being stuff. That's what I'm writing about.
That's what he said. Pen songs that always transcend her own experience, that always reach to those listening.
Oh, well, bless his heart for saying so.
Well, that's what we're talking about, isn't it? You've had, you mentioned your daughter.
Yes.
Is she musical? And I noticed she's on the cover and involved in one of your recordings, or at least as far as the photographs and so forth.
Yes, she is. She's an album called An Angel at My Shoulder, and she's the angel. She's just a wonderful young woman. She's about 16 now. And I feel very fortunate that I get to know her, let alone be her mom. She's cooler than her mother will ever hope to be. But yes, she is musical, and she sings in an a cappella group, and she plays flute in the high school band over at North, and she also does quite a bit of theater. She's involved with the high school Shakespeare group in town, and she writes beautiful poetry. She just really is a wonderful, good-hearted soul. I'm so delighted that she's in my life.
I notice your husband also plays acoustic guitar on that recording, too.
Oh, yes, he does. Yeah, Robert does.
So there's a whole family here.
Yeah, yeah. Robert did music for many years, Robert Midas, and he's worked on my albums, and he's also produced helped produce a couple of them. Right now he's in law school, so he's not really touring and doing music in that sense. But yes, it's been always very nice that we can share that. And we still share it, but just, you know, not on the road anymore.
Well, why don't we share a little bit of your music with our audience?
Okay.
What could we play now that would be?
How about, now there's another song on this new album. In terms of talking about the great loves, another one of my great loves is literature. And I love to read and I love fine books and authors. And there's nothing more inspiring than a good book. So there's a song on this new album called The Moon Over Tucson. And it was inspired by a Barbara Kingsolver essay. It's real nice. She actually just wrote me a note not too long ago saying, "You got it. Cool." Well, nice song.
Let's see what's so cool about it. Okay.
Yeah, we just can't help it, so we do it again. We just gone the gas and let the wheels spin, it's true. And I've heard it said, we're not so very far from the back of our heads. And the moon shines high over Tucson, all the waters that were long ago dry. Cause the moon don't care if the water's not there, it's high tide. Yeah, isn't it physical?
We have just heard the selection, The Moon Over Tucson, from the album My True Name, written, produced, sung by our guest today, Carrie Newcomer. Actually, I gave away the next question I was going to ask you is, let's touch on the practical. You have released this new CD. It's called My True Name, and in it you are more than just a performer. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've done and the experiences of putting out this album?
Well, My True Name is my fifth album on Rounder Records. Rounder is a wonderful acoustic label out of Boston. And I said it's my fifth one, and this one I just feel like it's the finest thing I've ever done. What a nice feeling to feel like you're getting older and you're learning something, you know. So this album was really a fun one for me. Producing wise, I co-produced the album with Mark Williams, who also co-produced the last album with me, My Father's Only Son. But I think this was the first one where I ever stepped forward with, my own vision for it as producer. And, you know, this is what I want. This is what I'm after. And it was very exciting. And I'm very happy with what happened.
What's unique about it?
This one?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to in comparison to my other albums, I think this one's a little raw, a little edgier. I think maybe a little more cohesive too in terms of the selections of music. The band, I think the band is very appropriate. It's a band that I've been working with for about 2 years now. So going into the studio with this same group of people that I've been working intimately with for a while was really a delight, you know, coming in and putting, you know, recording these songs we've been working on for quite a while.
Are all the songs on these albums are your own creation?
Yes, yeah, I'm the writer for these albums.
And you write the music and the words, you're not producing anybody else's?
No, I'm not doing covers on these albums. Sometimes in live performance, I love to pull out things, you know, that I just love other people's music. But on the albums, I generally do my own.
You can do more than three chords now.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. On a good day.
On this one, is there a theme on this recording, My True Name?
My True Name? Well, yes, there is. My True Name is a song on the album, actually, as well as the title of the album. And it's about all the things we do and the person that we are. You know, there's all these things we do, all these hats we wear. But underneath all those things that we do is the person that we are, the person that goes by our true name. You know, this is a very essential thing about a person. And what I've always felt is if there's a person, another person who knows that name, knows your true name and speaks that name and appreciates that true name, that's one of the finest gifts, you know. And if you discover that name yourself, then that's one of the finest discoveries. And when you sense that there is something greater than yourself that also speaks that name, then that's one of life's finest mysteries.
I'm going to say something. Maybe I'm out of school here, but the way you sound when we talk is much different than the persona that comes across when you sing.
Really?
I mean, there's much more, I don't know whether the word gusto is the right one, but you sing with more vehemence than you talk.
Oh.
So there's, you know, it's a different life. And I see the difference. We talk here about the person behind the persona.
Yes. Yeah, it's interesting. I have a rather soft speaking voice, and I've been kidded about that, actually. You know, how come you know, talk like this and sing like this. But I have a pretty low voice, actually, singing voice.
Could I ask you a favor?
Sure.
Could you brought your guitar, could you sing for us now?
Oh.
Live, right here.
Well, yes, I would love to. In fact, I have a song that's not recorded anywhere, kind of right out of the notebook, so I'll just do that.
And we can get our composer's clearance from you.
Yes.
Well, tell us about it, what you're going to do.
It's a song called When the Evening Like a Sparrow. And I've always loved that image that God loves every sparrow that falls to the ground. I just always thought that's the most lovely thought, that it wasn't, you know, every eagle or, you know, beautiful dove or noble lion or something like that. It was every little brown bird, every one is known and each one is gathered. And I just thought that was the nicest, most tender thought. So the song is somewhat of a love song. It's kind of based on that thought.
A sparrow folds down under its small wings, all the light bones and the feathers of the day. Only then, in that moment, stop the rushing and just hold me. Lay your hands where it hurts, and we'll leave it that way. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I have often dreamt of angels, but I very rarely see them. But I know that they've been there, 'cause something smells like sky in the horizon.
We have just heard the song When the Evening Like a Sparrow. This is originally written by, performed by, sung by, everything by Carrie Newcomer, who's our guest today. And you'll never hear it differently, because that was live right here. Carrie, that's so much fun. Thank you for doing that. You have a multiple task life. You're a mother, you're a wife, and a performer, just amongst the first three. Mm. How do you balance all of this?
Oh, gosh, that is the great question. You know, it's so important that I keep balanced. And I know when I'm not, you know, if I'm out on the road too much or I'm, you know, not playing enough or whatever, I know when I'm out of balance. But I think whenever a person has a busy life or a demanding career, that is the task. I did make a choice a long time ago with my daughter that I wasn't going out on really long tours. I mean, some musicians go out there and they're out there forever, you know, and that's fine. But I really wanted to be present for my daughter as she was growing up. I was a single mother for quite a while, too. And so all the more that my presence was really important. So I don't do long tours. I go out and I do blocks. I'll go out to a part of the country and I do a section of the country and I come back and I'm home and I'm here.
For how long?
It just depends. Sometimes it's, you know, a week. Sometimes it's 3 days. Sometimes it's, you know, a week and a half. Sometimes it's 4 days. I mean, it just depends on how the schedule's lining up and how busy the season is. But I'll go out to another part of the country and come back home and be here again. I don't make as much money that way, and I don't get as much sleep, but, you know, I get to be a mom, and I get to be really present. So it's an okay trade-off.
The first question that would come to mind is that as your daughter grows older, does she need you around as much?
You know, that's an interesting thing, because right now, as a teenager, you know, I'm feeling like it's very important for me to be home and very present, maybe more so than has been for many years. You know, when she was very little, when she was a little child, she needed me physically as well as emotionally just to take care of her and keep her safe. As a teenager, you know, when she's now growing into being a young adult and a young woman, she doesn't need me to take care of her and keep her safe, but I think she needs me to be there, to know that I'm there, that she can rely on me, that in this very changing, confusing time of growing up, that there's someplace solid for her where she's okay and she's appreciated and she's loved, you know, no matter what.
That's exactly what we just said a minute ago. Music that always transcends her own experience and reaches to those listening. I like it. Your music is called honest music because it's your thoughts. I mean, you're not reflecting what someone taught you. You are indirectly, but it still comes from your center. What are the influences that help create this honest music?
You know, I think part of it is I just have this real sense, or I guess, I don't know, dedication or need. I'm not sure what the word is, but that I just don't think there's enough honesty in this world. I think there's just so much that's kept hidden. And, you know, there's so much freedom and honesty. I read this quote by B.B. King once that if you're honest in your music and you're honest in your life, you never have to cover your tracks. You never have to think about what you said before. You just live it, and it's there, and it's what it is. And, you know, I really kind of hold with that. Sometimes that's a scary thing. You know, sometimes it's kind of scary to be honest because, you know, what if you're honest and you're open with who you are and what you're feeling or what you think, and someone doesn't like it or someone doesn't get it. And so it's a risk that you take when you're being very honest and open. Like I said, it's one of the more important things about what I'm doing musically is trying very hard to be as open and human as I can be.
Is this the way your parents were?
Not really. You know, not really. You know, my parents were, you know, wonderful people. I think they were both people of great integrity. My father, especially, you know, through his life, I've seen many times when he did stand up for something, an issue of integrity, and, you know, maybe it came back on him in a negative way, but being very dedicated to this very high sense of integrity. So I guess, you know, in some ways no, but in some ways yes. In that way, I learned that from him. It's as important how you are in this world as what you do.
The next question is one of those that has no answer. But I'm going to throw it at you anyway. So you can duck or do as you please. Where do you think life's going to lead you?
Whoa. You know, I said in the beginning of our talk here that, you know, it's been a long and winding. You know, I never really had some kind of lofty goal in what I was trying to do as an artist. You know, it wasn't like, okay, now I'm going to be rich and famous. You know, that wasn't in the general plan. You know, with, you know, health insurance wasn't in the general plan. The goal was to be able to make good music, fine music, and for that to do some good out there. However I had to do that, however path I needed to wind through to do that. So in some senses, I feel like it's been really one heck of a ride and that I've been quite successful. I've gotten to do what I love, you know, and some people don't get to. In the future, I also know that I have this great love and this great passion for music and writing and that I'll always do that and, you know, more of the same type of goal with that. But I also know I have other great loves in my life, and those loves call me too. And I'm not sure how that's all going to integrate together, but I'm sure it will.
And you'll hear the calling.
Yes, yeah, I'm listening.
Carrie, I can't thank you enough for being with us. Our time's run out, and we have to go on. But could we finish with one last selection of yours that would be special?
Well, I'd love that. Well, we've been talking a lot about my true name and that whole who you are and in comparison to what you do. So let's just do the song, My True Name.
From sense. Your new album, My True Name.
Yes.
Our guest has been Carrie Newcomer, songwriter, singer, mother, wife, and person with a number of great loves. She's been our guest today. I'm Bob Willard. This is Profiles. This is WFIU. And thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Let me call you darling. Maybe call you sweetheart. Don't you hate it when they call you Louise? Isn't it scary when they want to call you Mary? A whore or a saint or a tease? But you came here in summer. You'd been living in Manhattan. You called me white-eyed and handsome. But you saw to my city.
The program you just heard was recorded in the studios of WFIU in October of 1998. Production assistance came from Michael Paskash and Christina Kuzmich.